AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Jackson Hewitt.
I'm Steve Kathan. Air safety, the key matter today at an FAA summit that's followed a string of airport close calls.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says the nation can't wait for the next catastrophic event to happen to address the problems out there.
What are the root causes of the incidents that we've seen?
Acting FAA Administrator Billy Nolen ticked off close calls on runways and terminal ramp areas and unruly passenger incidents, adding,
these events are concerning.
The chair of the National Transportation Safety Board notes that just because no one has been killed doesn't mean things are safe. Allison Keyes, CBS News, Washington.
Russia vows to retrieve the U.S. drone that went down in the Black Sea off Ukraine. The U.S. wants it back, too. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says the confrontation with Russian fighter jets that caused the trouble was uncalled for.
This hazardous episode is a part of a pattern of aggressive risky and unsafe actions by Russian pilots in international airspace.
The U.S. says it will continue using drones in that area to gather intelligence. It's a rough day on Wall Street, triggered by renewed banking uncertainty. CBS's Jill Schlesinger says the problem is with a major bank based in Europe.
Credit Suisse has been a problem child in the global banking system, but the reality is this is a huge bank, and the 25% drop in the share price is raising concerns that the overall banking system globally is coming under pressure.
A conservative federal judge in Texas is hearing arguments today on a push to ban a key abortion pill all over the country. OBGYN Kristen Brandy argues against it.
A lot of people rely on this medication. It's something that has been the standard of care for over 20 years.
The day after a powerful snowstorm rolled through the Northeast, there are issues.
There's trees down everywhere. I had to turn around four times.
Internet's down. Yeah. Wi-Fi is terrible. I mean, we can't. Our cell phones don't work up here right now.
Tens of thousands don't have power. Honda is recalling 500,000 vehicles in the U.S. and Canada because front seat belts might not latch right. It covers some recent model years of the CR-V, Accord, and others. In Britain, a ceremony with the King and a member of Queen.
I'm Vicky Barker in London.
Happy Jubilee.
Less than a year after that famous skit involving Paddington Bear, the late Queen Elizabeth, and that famous Queen riff, Queen guitarist Brian May walked back into Buckingham Palace this morning and walked out, served. Brian May, knighted by King Charles.
Checking Wall Street right now, the Dow is down 693 points. This is CBS News.
With Jackson Hewitt, be 100% certain about your taxes and get 50% off tax prep. 50% is a limited time offer for new clients at participating locations. Max value $200. Visit jacksonhewitt.com/50 for...
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Aaron Rodgers says he's going to New York. More in a minute. The city of Madison started paying some families $500 a month in September. The research says so far about 60% of that money was spent on clothes and food, about 20% went to transportation, and about 10% went to bills or rent. Lawmakers will decide later about unbanning conversion therapy in Wisconsin, Racine Democrat Greta Neubauer.
I am just so disappointed that we cannot agree to ban a policy that directly increases the risk of depression and suicide in children.
So the ban stays lifted for now. Governor Evers promises to veto the bill if it ever passes. In sports, Aaron Rodgers is publicly acknowledging his plans to play for the New York Jets next season. He tells the Pat McAfee podcast the Jets and Green Bay Packers are working out the details. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Want to get more involved in supporting democracy, justice, and equality across the state? Check out the Wisconsin Grassroots Festival this Saturday, March 18th. This annual event is happening at Wisconsin Heights High School near Mazomanie. It includes workshops, food, and entertainment, featuring Civic Media's own Earl Ingram Show and James Santel from Morning Cannolis, plus a keynote speech from Crudy, Mike Crute of the Devil's Advocates. Learn more and register now at wigrassrootsnetwork.org. The Wisconsin Grassroots Festival this Saturday, sponsored by the Civic Media Network of Radio Stations.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show, and we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
You need some whoop 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 boing, you know?
Absolutely.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am not Kristen Bry. Kristen is off today. My name is Dan Schaefer, and I'm filling in as your guest host today. We've made it through 2 hours of the show. I haven't had our producer have to rush over to the bleep button just yet, so we're doing great. Kristen had some pretty exciting stuff happen today, too. She had her content on Instagram, on the As Goes Wisconsin Instagram, shared by one Julia Louis-Dreyfus. That is pretty exciting. She had a great video about the upcoming Wisconsin Supreme Court race. So I would encourage everybody to check that out if you're missing Kristen today on your airwaves. And again, if you're unfamiliar with me and my work, my name is Dan Schaefer. I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. And I'm very excited to introduce our next guest, Justin Worland, who is a Washington, D.C.-based senior correspondent at Time Magazine covering climate change and the intersection of policy, politics, and society. He will be giving the keynote speech tomorrow at a clean energy event at Discovery World in Milwaukee, organized by WIS Politics and WIS Business, which will focus on how federal funding will drive changes in how we heat and cool our homes, how we commute, and how we compete in a worldwide energy market. So, Justin, thank you so much for joining us here on As Goes Wisconsin.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here in Milwaukee, and hoping that we can get Julia Louis-Dreyfus to share this segment.
that'd be pretty exciting, huh? That would certainly give us a bigger audience to talk about these issues. I'm interested. I'm very interested. Glad you are joining our show here today. Interested to learn more about what you have to say about the Inflation Reduction Act and in this speech tomorrow at the WIS Politics event. So what are some of the big picture things that you're planning to discuss?
Yeah, I would say one sort of high level framing when I think about the Inflation Reduction Act and I think about climate change and climate policy more broadly is, you know, the immense challenges and also the immense opportunities, right? So this is a huge deal. It's a lot of money, just $369 billion, just sort of conservatively from the federal government. There's billions and billions more if you start to dig into how some of these line items actually play out. And that money is going to get pumped across the economy, creating opportunities for new jobs, creating opportunities, as you alluded to, for people to retrofit their homes, to do energy efficiency. It's going to change the way that the U.S. plays on the global stage, right? And that's important for geopolitics and sort of you know, these lofty things about how we trade and what, you know, what, how we interact with other countries, but it also means something about, you know, what jobs are in our own backyards, you know, here in Wisconsin or around the country. So lots of opportunity. And then there's challenges, right? There's supply chains that need to be built up. There are, as I was alluding to, geopolitical challenges that come out of that. So I'm going to talk about all of that. I think the key thing, you know, along with that, as I alluded to, is this is something that really matters for our day-to-day lives. And I want people to walk away understanding that and believing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this obviously a huge piece of legislation that was passed by the Democratic majorities in Congress last year, signed by President Biden. You know, it's going to be one of his signature pieces of legislation passed. It kind of, you know, it was the pieces of the Build Back Better deal, the massive Build Back Better deal. Much of it did not make it into the Inflation Reduction Act, but much of it did. And so I think it's really important to take a closer look at these issues because, you know, the name Inflation Reduction Act, I mean, let's be honest, it's not really what this bill is mostly about. And you're talking about a lot of the climate and clean energy components of this. So how does, let's bring that home a little bit. How is that going to impact us here in the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think every place across this country has the industries that they've had for you know years and decades, and all of those are sort of changing, and you know everybody's sort of touched in different ways. Obviously, the Midwest more broadly, huge home to transport sector, lots of manufacturing jobs still, you know, in the Midwest. And just a few weeks ago, I was in Michigan, where Ford was unveiling a new battery plant, which is, you know, they said would not have happened without the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's opportunities, you know, for the transit sector to sort of bring back some of the jobs that have been lost, and you know, to change, you know, places that are that still have those jobs. I mean, Milwaukee here, you know, home of Johnson Controls. Energy efficiency is a huge component, or it's an important component of the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's opportunities for companies like Johnson Controls here in Milwaukee to take advantage, and for consumers and businesses that use those technologies to take advantage of that. So there's lots of growth opportunities. I mean, you know, I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but this is a huge job opportunity for places like Wisconsin.
Yeah, and as Wisconsin kind of, you know, we're in kind of a period of economic flux in this state where we've had, you know, traditionally dominated by the manufacturing sector. But obviously that has been a decline for a couple decades now, at least. And, you know, as Wisconsin kind of tries to figure out its path forward, you know, legislation like this can open up some opportunities for, you know, kind of what that next step can be. So, you know, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say absolutely. And I think, yeah, I don't think anybody's saying that the manufacturing sector is going to be what it once was. But, you know, there's potential to, you know, bring some of the jobs back, particularly given that the provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, to take advantage of the tax incentives requires a North American supply chain. And, you know, that's a real incentive for these companies to locate and Wisconsin. I think the big question is, and this sort of remains to be seen, is you know, to what degree do a lot of these companies decide to build, you know, facilities here in Wisconsin, or you know, I mentioned Michigan, or do they go to places, you know, that are really trying to you know, offer incentives and have, you know, sort of easier labor laws than, you know, in some places in the Midwest, you know, places like Tennessee, Georgia, they're getting a lot of investment as well. So that's an interesting question to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm always interested to see like these competitions between the states for these types of things. You know, I think we had an interesting example, you know, last year before, something like that, where the federal decision to, you know, build new trucks for the U.S. Postal Service. And that contract ended up, you know, Oshkosh Truck got that contract. And they, instead of building it in Wisconsin, they're ending up building those, starting a new plant in South Carolina to build those. So it's going to be interesting to see if this creates another situation where you have kind of a number of these states with different, you know, labor laws or tax incentives or other requirements, you know, really competing with each other to try and get some of these take advantage of some of these opportunities with the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah, absolutely. Very critical question.
All right. So we are talking with Justin Werland. He's with Time Magazine. He's giving a keynote speech at Discovery World in Milwaukee tomorrow on a clean energy event hosted by WISP Politics and WISP Business. So what are some of the other things with this law about, you know, how, you know, one of the things that mentioned with this is, you know, it's going to change how we heat and cool our homes in a lot of ways. What are some of the impacts that this can have, you know, just on everyday folks and in their homes?
Yeah, well, I mean, the incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act, I mean, I believe the number is something, I don't want to say the number wrong, but there's thousands of dollars in incentives that homeowners can take advantage of for energy retrofits, for things like heat pumps, electric vehicles, which have an interesting sort of, in some cases, an interesting use case to actually attach and serve as a backup power source for homes. All of these are incentivized by the Inflation Reduction Act. And, you know, it's cold here today, or colder than where I came from. I'd be looking into how to take advantage of these things, because they, both they're tax incentives that you can take advantage of from the federal government, but they also can lower your energy costs. And that's something that the folks who wrote this legislation are quite proud of, you know, that it also can help everyday people cut their heating and energy costs.
Yeah, this is something I'm, you know, personally interested in, because I'm a homeowner in an old house on the west side of Milwaukee that is not the most energy efficient place to live. Got some old windows, got some old HVAC type stuff in the house. So I think, you know, there's a lot of old housing stock in the state of Wisconsin. So I think, you know, any type of energy efficient improvement opportunities, I think, is going to affect a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really, I mean, if you're a homeowner, it should affect you. I mean, this is something you should be taking a look at, no question.
Yeah, and I think I will be. I think I need to be learning more about what exactly this can offer us homeowners across Wisconsin, you know, and just the larger big picture of kind of how this very big, important, snarly law is going to impact people at the ground level. So we're coming up close to a break here. Justin, you are going to stick with us for another segment. If you have any questions about maybe how this law could impact you, feel free to give us a call. Give us a call at 844-967-2789. Again, that's 844-967-2789. Justin Werland from Time Magazine is going to be joining us for one more segment after the break here. Again, I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer, and I'm filling in for Kristen Bry, and we will be right back after the break. Stick with us.
March 15th.
What's March 15th?
March 15th is the absolute final day to take advantage of the 50% off on our Civic Media Premium Weather sponsorships. First, we spread your business message and phone number to our listeners. Then we spread Mother Nature's plans for the next 36 hours. You'll get a 15-second ad every hour followed by your phone number. Don't wait. March 15th is almost here. Log on to civicmedia.us/weather now. That's civicmedia.us/weather.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article in the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
What is dedication?
I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov.
Weather on this snowy day in Milwaukee could be brought to us by your pizza delivery business. Can you imagine how many families are snuggled in their homes enjoying hot, tasty pizza? Weather makes the phone ring for just $199 per week. Call us at 608-819-8255.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon with highs around 45. Winds out of the south, 10 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast tonight, slight chance for scattered rain showers. Lows dip down to about 38. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 45. Cloudy skies expected. A dusting of snow Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in for Kristen Bry, who is off today, but she's got some pretty exciting stuff going on today. She's got her content being shared and promoted by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, so that's pretty cool. Go check that out over on the As Goes Wisconsin Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and all the different places you find Kristen's work over the course of the week. We are joined for this segment by Justin Warland, who is a journalist at Time Magazine, and he is also giving a keynote speech tomorrow, I believe, at Discovery World in Milwaukee, talking about the Inflation Reduction Act and clean energy, climate change, all sorts of issues wrapped up in that big bill. So this next segment, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the implementation of that. So that bill got passed last year. And, you know, as the process, these processes take a while. So what happens next as this begins to be implemented, you know, on a federal level, on a state level, you know, what should people be paying attention to as this big, important piece of legislation begins to become a reality?
Yeah, well, there's a lot, right? So the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, is implemented through a range of different federal agencies. It requires, you know, uptake from the private sector, state participation. So it really, you know, the thing that you look for first is to see how agencies are crafting the rules, because Congress gives sort of a wide berth, you know, sort of with particulars that need to be defined by agencies. So a lot of that is happening in places like the Treasury Department, happening in places like the Department of Energy, EPA, et cetera. I think, you know, from an average, from a consumer perspective, you know, a lot of those rules are being crafted, as I said, at the Treasury Department. So rules about what kind of tax incentives, you know, what tax incentives look like. You know, that's some of that is we've gotten some of the sort of first drafts of that. And we're going to continue to see more come down the pike. As I said, part of this is, you know, the private sector, in some cases, has to take advantage of the tax incentives, things like clean energy tax incentives, you know, for sort of utility scale renewables, or also, you know, there are new technologies like hydrogen, et cetera, that the private sector has to buy into. And then, you know, there are some programs that states will, you know, participate in. This is actually from the bipartisan infrastructure law, but that kind of gets looped in with the Inflation Reduction Act. There's, you know, say every state has submitted plans for how they're going to build an electric vehicle network, charging network in their state, and how they can get federal funds from that. So it takes a lot of different players to kind of come together and turn this thing into something that achieves its objectives.
Yeah. To what extent is this kind of following the same process that we saw play out with the bipartisan infrastructure law?
Yeah, it's similar in many ways and different in other ways. I mean, I think the big difference is the emphasis on the private sector and private sector uptake. I mean, this is less about building roads and bridges, charging networks, et cetera, things that the government builds, and I think largely, almost entirely, about things that the private sector will build. So part of that is, if there's a consumer incentive, if there's if the government's going to pay for solar panels on your roof or for energy efficient housing, clearly the private sector is going to provide that because the incentive is there. Part of it is, though, even with things like hydrogen, as I alluded to, or some of these other technologies, there still has to be, the private sector has to believe they can make money off of it, even with these incentives. So I would say that's sort of a difference. Having said that, the two are designed to work together, right? So the bipartisan infrastructure law provides funding to upgrade the grid. That's really critical if you're going to build out clean energy, which is something that the private sector would build. So the two work together, but they're also different.
Yeah, and we've got a big climate change issue to tackle in this country going forward, and we have not really had the infrastructure in place to be able to do that, and this kind of allows that opportunity in a really meaningful way, and we're seeing some of those effects. We're seeing some of those changes, and people don't always think of Wisconsin as a place that is going to be necessarily impacted greatly by climate change. Just look at the recent winter that we've had, though. We've had a very mild winter. Great Lakes, we're going to get a lot more rain, precipitation going forward. So we're going to be impacted by this in a lot of ways, but also just economically to address some of these issues and find, better energy solutions going forward. And this bill, opens up some opportunities for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a sort of climate perspective, I think it's important to think, okay. I was on a panel with the governor Walz of Minnesota last week, and he was talking about how Duluth was named the safest place to be, in a climate apocalypse. And I don't want to overemphasize that Wisconsin is probably not going to be, turned into a flooded place like Florida. But at the same time, like, as you said, there are impacts for agriculture, and you don't want to miss the sort of bigger picture, which is that the world is changing. Industry is changing. There are going to be all sorts of things like migration that changes. So no place is an island, right? And Wisconsin will be affected. Having said that, it's also a really good opportunity. As we were saying earlier, it's an opportunity for new industry. It's an opportunity to really prepare for this 21st century economy.
Justin Warland, journalist from Time Magazine, he's going to be giving the keynote speech tomorrow at Discovery World in Milwaukee in an event presented by WIS Politics and WIS Business. Really interesting stuff. I'm fascinated to see kind of how this really, once the rubber meets the road, I think that's when things get interesting with a lot of these big bills like that. So I'm interested to see kind of what happens going forward. So Justin, thank you so much for joining us. I encourage people to check out your keynote speech tomorrow in Milwaukee if they have the opportunity. And when we get back from the break after this, we're going to be joined by Patty Vasquez, who's going to be talking to us about our neighbors to the south in Illinois and about the mayor's race in Chicago. So stick with us for that one. Justin, thank you again for joining us. But great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101.
CBS News Brief. The AA is increasing their population of people.
The U.S. has become a down to release the
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. After two large bank failures in California and New York, Wisconsin banking officials are reassuring customers that the state's banks are on sound financial footing because they have a more diverse customer base and safer portfolios than the tech banks that closed. WPR reporting the Wisconsin Bankers Association says a majority of the money in Wisconsin banks is federally insured, whereas a majority of the Silicon Valley Bank's deposits were not insured by the FDIC. The EPA releasing proposed limits to PFAS or forever chemicals yesterday and setting up a national standard for PFAS in drinking water to prevent related illnesses and help keep communities safe. They're suggesting individual limits for the two most common forever chemicals at 2 parts per trillion. That's considerably lower than Wisconsin's drinking water standard for PFAS at 70 parts per trillion. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
You recall the Capitol insurrection? A post-ABC news poll showed 54% said Trump should be criminally charged for inciting the riot. That's like a litany of criminal allegations against the former president. You can say it's all partisanship and a witch hunt, but there wasn't one credible accusation against Obama during his entire 8-year term. So how Republicans just ignore all the evidence? I mean, he was perpetrating a coup on multiple levels.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms.
Yeah. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
My name is Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host for today. We've made it to the last half hour of the show, and I'm very excited to be joined by our next guest, the host and producer of Driving It Home on WCPT 820 AM, and a lifelong Chicagoan, Patty Vasquez. Thank you so much for joining the show.
I am so excited. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful because you're usually my guest.
So we're switching things up for today because I am a regular guest on your show, where you have me join the show every Wednesday on Driving It Home to talk about all the craziness that is happening in Wisconsin politics. So now I'm turning the tables on you because we gotta bring you on here so we can talk about all the craziness that's happening in Chicago politics. So before we jump into the conversation here, we have been kind of focusing on mayoral elections throughout the show. So in the first hour of the show, we had Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's involved with local politics in Green Bay. She was telling us about the mayoral election in Green Bay. We were joined by Scott Gordon of Tone Madison. He was telling us about the mayoral election happening in Madison. We've also got a mayoral election happening south of the border. Yep. In Chicago. And I think it's really important for us in Wisconsin to be paying attention to this election. Yep. As well, because it is an important race for a neighboring state. It is an important race, I think, for the whole Midwest, because I think Chicago is such an important piece of our regional economy for so many things. So what's and with the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. I've been focusing so much on that that I haven't had a whole lot of time to pay a lot of attention to what's happening in the race for mayor of Chicago. So what's going on down there?
Well, in relation to the fact that, how it affects Wisconsin, I mean, this is also a big labor race because Paul Vallis, wherever he has gone, has worked to diminish the rights of teachers, the ability to bargain and have access to representation. I mean, in Philadelphia, in New Orleans, pretty much everywhere he's gone, he has opened more charter schools. In New Orleans, after Katrina, he went in, did his work, and it's almost entirely charter schools. I don't think people realize this. It's almost entirely charter schools in New Orleans right now. And during the pandemic, Paul Vallis talked a lot about how we've got to break the contract. If they're not going to go back into the schools, you know, we've got to make sure that our teachers aren't getting homeschooled. He connected a lot of what was happening during the pandemic with violence in Chicago to kids not being in school. And it was rough. It's pretty rough. And then you have Brandon Johnson, who is a former Chicago public teacher, a Cook County commissioner. He has been on the record after George Floyd is saying, you know, we need to defund the police. He's trying to figure out that space now. So you really have kind of the two ends of the political spectrum in Chicago. We have a lot of conservatives here, especially in the neighborhoods like where I live, where there's a lot of cops and firefighters. And I also live near a lot of teachers. So I think it really reflects, where we are as a city right now. We are bumping heads with each other, what it means to have safe streets, what it means to have quality and free education. So it's kind of the perfect battle in many ways. And I'm really concerned about the direction we're going in.
Yeah, it's an interesting race. Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson emerged from this primary. So you have Lori Lightfoot, the incumbent mayor, who did not make the runoff, did not make the final ballot. So she will be a one-term right. mayor. So, you know, essentially making it an open race for mayor of Chicago. And you have kind of the two candidates, from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, who are kind of farthest apart on the political yeah. spectrum among the candidates that were running. So you had Lori Lightfoot, you had Congressman Chuy Garcia, who yeah. both came up short. I was kind of surprised that Garcia, just having a little bit of national profile, that he didn't do as well as he did. But you have these two candidates, probably the farthest apart of any of the two candidates running in the primary, and you have a real contrast on the ballot on April 4th, the same day we're going to be voting here in Wisconsin as well.
See, this is why you're an excellent guest, because when I talk to you, you give all that background and the context, whereas I'm in it every day and I'm like, here's where Vallis is and here's where Brandon Johnson is. But, you know, so there were nine candidates in it was our general election. So we don't do primaries. And here is a little bit of background. After Harold Washington became the first black mayor of Chicago, the conservative Democrats in Chicago looked to the Dixiecrats and were like, how do they do it down there in order to preserve this sort of more conservative element? So they eliminated primaries. There is no, you know, Democrat running against a Republican anymore. You pretty much everyone says they're a Democrat in order to even compete. And that's how we end up with the general. And then if someone is not able to win it outright with 50 plus one, we end up with a runoff. And this is the second runoff since 2015. So back to Chuy Garcia, who did run against Rahm Emanuel in 2015, forced him into a runoff. And really, that was that song you played at the beginning about there was an election and nobody showed up. It hovered around the low 20% of people that showed up and reelected Rahm Emanuel. The problem with Chuy Garcia's campaign was that he came in so late. I mean, after petitions were already circulating, I think there might have only been 3 weeks left. Vallis had announced a year ago, I think in April of 22. Brandon Johnson announced in the fall after that. So it was, and he had already locked up. Brandon Johnson locked up the support of CTU, which is one of the most powerful unions in the city. Paul Vallis was on his way to locking up FOP. And here's the thing about Vallis was that he has, and he talks a lot about this, he brags about his relationships with the police department. He says, you know, I negotiated their contract. The police department did not have contract for over, I want to say, maybe 3 years. It was quite a long time. They did not have a contract at the end of Rahm Emanuel's term and going into Lori Lightfoot's. And he says, I did it for free. Did you? Did you do it for free when you then get the endorsement and the full support of the Chicago Police Department? That doesn't seem like it's free to me.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, maybe a little bit of quid pro quo going on there. Is that what you're suggesting? I don't know.
Yeah, 1,000% quid pro quo. I mean,
So we're talking to Patty Vasquez about the race for mayor of Chicago. I know this show is called As Goes Wisconsin, but we are paying attention to what's going on with our neighbors in Chicago because we want there to be a thriving, growing Chicago as well. And I think, you know, you mentioned something at the outset that there are, you know, Chicago always thought of as a very Democratic city. And it, of course, is. But there, you know, just based on the numbers of how many people live in the city of Chicago, you're going to have a lot of conservatives there. You're going to have a lot of, you know, Republican aligned voters. And I think about this with Milwaukee as well, because, you know, Milwaukee is so much bigger than every other city in the state that the number one, you know, the most Trump votes for any municipality in Wisconsin came from Milwaukee. And just because it's 25%, you know, 25% of the city is going to vote Republican. That's still a huge chunk of the city. So, you know, we had a situation with our mayoral election a year ago in Milwaukee where, you know, we had a primary and basically the Republican candidate who's now a state representative, Republican state representative working in Madison, he, Bob Donovan, he's basically a Republican. So he got about 25% of the vote once we finally got past the primary and Cavalier Johnson got that kind of a huge number, more than 70% of the vote to win a full term as mayor. So is that a similar dynamic to what's happening in Chicago? Are there, you know, is the expectation that a lot of the more, you know, progressive, liberally aligned candidates are going to rally behind Brandon Johnson, or are people kind of split there depending on kind of who they had been supporting?
That is something that has been concerning me for the last couple weeks. I talked to a Democrat that I've been working with for over a decade. I advocate for families that have an individual in their family with disabilities for, and I don't want to name their name because I was very disappointed when they told me that they would be voting for Vallis. So Vallis seems to be drawing on Republicans, 1,000% there. I'm going to say that I should stop saying that because nothing is 1,000, but he is drawing on Republican support. And I'm not just saying that. He's getting all kinds of attention on Fox News. Conservatives across the country, talk show hosts are definitely salivating at the idea of a very conservative, I guess he's saying he's a Democrat, taking over Chicago, a pro-police, anti-teacher, teachers union candidate taking over the city. And the thing that I watch, and so I ran for office in 2020. So I have a somewhat of a handle on my neighborhood. You know, I am a progressive, but I also grew up around a lot of cops and firefighters. And they kind of, you know, many of them supported me. The candidate who did win was even more progressive than I am, at least on paper. So I have, and then we also, there was a cop in the race. So in a three-way race, I got 38% of the vote. And the reason I mention that is because I have an idea of what voter turnout can be like. And that was right when the pandemic was starting. In this general election, 42% of my ward showed up. And most of them, the majority of them voted for Paul Vallis. I think it was like 75% voted for Paul Vallis. Like Lori Lightfoot got 5.7%. Brandon maybe got like 7%, somewhere in those numbers. And that's unsettling. The wards north of me and a little bit west of me came out in similar numbers, 45%, when the city turnout was like 36%. So that tells you that there's a higher turnout. There was a lot of motivation to vote against Lori Lightfoot. There was a lot of motivation to vote for Paul Vallis. So it's not just a vote against somebody, but they had someone that they want to get in there. And you can see it with all the signs, like our alderman, also very conservative, basically had Trump rallies in front of the police station a couple of years ago. So, and another thing, that's as far as conservatives in my community, 52% in 2016 for Trump, 50 in Chicago.
In Chicago.
So in Chicago. And if you folded the map with the south side of Chicago with Mount Greenwood, which also has a lot of cops and firefighters, similar numbers. And these are and another thing is to remember that we are one of the most segregated cities in the country. So you have predominantly white. My neighborhood, when I went door knocking as a candidate, my husband could hear me because I had a Bluetooth in. just to have someone like with me. And he could hear in the tone of my voice, he would say, do not hug that black person, because there are so few. My tone of voice would be like, hey, I'm so happy you're here. It must be so hard. Because there were only six. There were six from September through March. I only had six black people answer the door in my neighborhood. That's it. So that's going to play a big part of this. Racism is going to play a part in this. Conservatism in my neighborhood is going to play a big part. Public safety. And by public safety, that's a dog whistle a lot of times for, you know, the black people are causing a lot of crime.
Yeah.
Really. Neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just as current conservatives across the country like to talk about Chicago, conservatives in no matter where your community, they're going to in Wisconsin, always scapegoating Milwaukee. We know with a lot of these coded terms, yes, that our friends on some of the other talk radio stations in the region here like to use for some of the problems that Milwaukee's facing. I imagine a fairly similar dynamic, yeah, happening in Chicago. We're talking to Patty Vasquez, who is the host of Driving It Home on Driving It Home on WCPT 820 AM, lifelong Chicagoan. She's going to be joining us for one more segment here. So after the break, we're going to be continuing to talk about what's going on in the Chicago mayor's race. Is the top issue in the race their relationship with Wisconsin and Milwaukee? Has that come up at all?
Look, abortion has come up. So
sure.
It's kind of part of the conversation.
Yeah. That's definitely a part of the conversation. Maybe some more Wisconsin residents moving to Chicago if things go a certain way, if things go sideways.
That's why we're trying to organize Fibs for Wisconsin and help Janet Protasiewicz win.
That's right. Well, see, I've been pretty good so far, not having our producer run over to the beep button. So I'm not gonna make him work any harder than he has to with talking about the fibs or the fish or the fish tabs. If anyone knows what a fish tab is, call in the show, because I think that's a fun one. So we're gonna be continuing to talk with Patty after the break here. About the race for mayor in Chicago between Paul Vallas and Brandon Johnson. Fascinating race happening just across the border in Wisconsin. How much time we got before the break here, Calvin? Just one more minute. Okay.
There you go. All right.
So I have to imagine one other thing that the Chicagoans must be paying attention to happening in Wisconsin right now is whether Aaron Rodgers is going to be in the division going next year. So that's something that we've been monitoring on the show today as well, because this could, anything could happen at any time with Aaron Rodgers potentially getting traded to the Jets. I have to imagine the Chicago fans are ready to see him go.
Well, we're going to be the Arlington Heights Bears soon. So we're not really, I'm not as invested as I used to be. So I wish you the best.
Yeah, that's right. The Arlington Heights Bears against against Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers. Boy, that's going to be a little weird. All right. Well, stick with us. We're going to be continuing this conversation after the break. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in as your guest host today on As Goes Wisconsin. Kristen is off, but you can find Kristen's content on Instagram, where she's been promoted by Julia Louis-Dreyfus today. That's pretty fun. So stick with us. We're going to keep talking after the break. We'll be right back.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Weather on this snowy, snowy day could be brought to us by your business. Can you imagine how many ice augers and fishing shanties are being bought as we speak? Weather sponsorships make the phone ring. Call us at 608-819-8255.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 45 this afternoon under partly cloudy skies. Winds out of the south, 10 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Slight chance for scattered rain showers. Lows level off around 38. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow. Highs around 45. Cloudy skies. A dusting of snow Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host today. If you're unfamiliar with me and my work, I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. I'm also a regular contributor to Heartland Signal and a regular guest on WCPT 820 with Patty Vasquez, who is our guest here today. She hosts the Driving It Home radio show in Chicago, and I go on her show every week to talk about their crazy neighbors to the north and whatever wild insanity that Wisconsin Republicans are bringing to the news cycle on elections and whatever else. We've been talking a lot about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race lately. So I decided we should turn the tables a little bit today with me guest hosting the show and have Patty join us so she can tell us about our goofy neighbors to the south and about what's going on with their race for mayor, because they have an election the same day that we do. Again, reminder, April 4th, less than 3 weeks away, early voting, early absentee, in-person absentee voting, less than a week away, starts in the state of Wisconsin. So be ready to vote and be ready to flip that Wisconsin Supreme Court. But Patty is telling us a little bit about what's been happening, about the race for mayor in Chicago. So what have been some of the big things happening lately? And you said you wanted to talk a little bit about what was going on with the impact of social media on this race. So what's going on here?
Sure. So Paul Vallis let me put it this way. He ran in 2019. So he was in that big race. We had 11 candidates. And, you know, this is something that, again, with ranked choice voting, we're talking a lot about that in Illinois now. We're looking at that as a possibility in our state legislature. Lori Lightfoot made it out of that first round in the general election with about 17% of the vote. Tony Preckwinkle, who was the other runoff candidate, had about 16%. So nobody had anywhere near a majority. I contend that when you have too many choices, people choose nothing. I think suppressed the voter turnout. But the day after that election, I mean, I'm not saying like that, I don't have the exact date, but really quite quickly, Paul Vallis started to be a part of a lot of neighborhood groups. We're just starting to talk about this on my show where people are calling in. They're like, yeah, I remember him being on my neighborhood chats. So like anytime there was violence, he was amplifying that in neighborhood groups and how the police are being handcuffed and hamstringed and we're not letting them do their jobs. He was courting the police support the minute he lost in 2019. And we see that. And he also started speaking at conferences and events that were held by a group called Awake Illinois, which is one of these parents' choice, parents' freedoms groups. And
not woke Illinois, just to be awake.
Awake.
Yes.
No, it's awake. Okay. It's that sort of sarcastic, well, if you're woke, we're awake.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're a book banning group. They're an anti-trans group. They call the governor a groomer. They're very aggressive. They have gained a lot of momentum. They were very involved in the gubernatorial race, trying to elect Darren Bailey, who I don't know if you remember, but after the Highland Park shooting, the 4th of July parade where several people lost their lives and a young boy had his spinal cord severed. And his name is Cooper. And I had the, experience of working with Cooper a little bit because my son and he were in the hospital at the same time. Beautiful little boy whose life has been altered so dramatically and catastrophically, and of course lives that were lost, and just the trauma of it all. And within less than, I think, 2 hours, Darren Bailey appeared with his campaign signs and a whole group of people. You know, that was very tragic. Now it's time to celebrate. Like, that's the kind of tone, because they didn't want to talk anything about gun violence. They didn't want that to be the conversation. And Awake Illinois was very involved in holding fundraisers, elevating him. And Paul Vallis appeared at some, like, not just appeared, he was on their promotions as a speaker for school choice, for what kids should be taught about public safety. And so all of that is out there. And this is the maddening part of any race, right? Where you're like, but you just, like, we talked about this with Ron Johnson, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can say the craziest things and he's like, that's not what I meant. Or, you know, that's just, that was then, or a lie is not a lie kind of stuff. And so that's what we're seeing with Paul Vallis. Now, Brandon Johnson has some of the language that can be divisive, you know, with defund the police. And And, you know, there's a misunderstanding of what that push was for. We have programs in Illinois now in Chicago where we do send out trauma responders, social workers that go out for domestic violence situations, mental health situations. And that was, you know, unfortunately, the language of defund the police was not reallocate or, you know, where our priorities are, which would also keep police safe if we are approaching these situations with an impactful intention. Then we are keeping them safe as well. But Paul Vallis has been, I would say it's very much in the conservative right-wing vein of driving a message home. And he was very deliberate and precise with it for over 3 years. And now we're seeing the outcome of that.
And from what I understand, he's more or less the front runner in this race, right? He's the favorite to win. Or I hesitate to make any mm-hmm. characterizations of a race that I'm not particularly familiar with.
For those who can't see us, I'm massaging I clench my jaw so much. I am hopeful that the grassroots efforts all over the city of Chicago will, first of all, we need voter turnout. We need to find voters who aren't registered. We need to get young people involved, because that was the lowest turnout that I've seen in a long time. 18 to 24 year olds, I think it hovered around less than 10% for voter turnout amongst young people. I think that they're engaged on the national level, but in Chicago, it's very low numbers. So that's, the polling seems to be within 5% of each other, and it goes back and forth as to who's in the lead. So it's close. And that's a 14% undecided in most cases.
So beyond just the divisive comments and whatever mischaracterization of pushes for criminal justice reform that came out of 2020, what are some of the other things that we should know about Brandon Johnson?
Yes, yeah, that's, you know, I'm so bad, like the terror in my heart, you can hear, because I'm like, and that's a really good point that you bring up, because going after the other candidates, conservatism doesn't necessarily, you know, motivate people. Brandon Johnson has been a community activist. He has been a Cook County commissioner. He knows how to work budgets. He knows how to work with people. He is so well versed on what it means to make sure that kids have a quality education. He is invested in our public transportation. We have been struggling since the pandemic to get ridership up and to have a strong path forward. He has a vision for connecting people who are unhoused, because we have a lot of folks who are living at the bus stations, at the train stations, on the trains, and he wants to connect those people with services that will help them out of those situations. I think that he has a vision that, you know, is more pedestrian centric in the sense that obviously we're all car brained, but, you know, in that sense of, you know, public safety isn't just crime. It's also making sure that people don't get hit by a car. Sorry.
Thanks for all of that, Patty. I know. It's a very exciting race that you have in Chicago for the race for mayor. We will be watching that from here. Hey, that's our show. Thank you for tuning in to As Goes Wisconsin. I've been your host, Dan Schaefer. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Oh. the Ides of March, the day that Caesar was killed, and it's the final day for you to make a killer deal.
March 15th.
That's right, March 15th is your last day to take advantage of our biggest sale. We're slashing prices on our premium sponsorships up to 50%.
Tie your business message and phone number into our hourly weather forecasts and get results.
But you must hurry.
This spectacular offer ends March 15th. Log on to civicmedia.us/weather now. That's civicmedia.us/weather.
Do you love getting rewards when you shop? Then shop Knucklehead CBD and Vapes with the Knuckleheads Club. Every $10 spent gets you closer to 25% off. No matter what you buy, make sure you buy Knuckleheads. Stop in Saturday and Sunday and get 15% off Wellness and Wellness Plus, including Delta 8, THCP, CBD, and more, while getting points towards your next purchase.
Visit Knuckleheads Milwaukee at 2949 North Oakland Avenue or online at knuckleheads.shop.
Knuckleheads CBD and Vapes, your one stop.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.